Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Blog Talk Radio studios, it's time for Classic Chrome, your weekly motorcycle radio program exclusively covering all things vintage and antique on two wheels. Every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central, we discuss various aspects of antique motorcycles as well as the culture that surrounds them. Now, please welcome your host, old motorcycle fanatic and avid enthusiast, Buck Carson.
Good evening. It is October 14th, 2015. You are tuned into Classic Chrome. I wanted to bring a show in there on that note, The Sounds of Philadelphia. I heard that on the radio today and thought that'd be a perfect way to start tonight's show. So welcome, everybody. This is your weekly dose of antique motorcycling fun. We do this show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central. And if you can't catch the live show, don't worry. You can always get us on Apple iTunes. So if you have an Apple iPhone, iPod, iPad, or any Apple iTunes equipped device, you can get us anytime, anywhere on demand, which is really nice. So if you're on a road trip somewhere and you say, man, I'm tired of listening to the radio and I want to hear some Classic Chrome, all you got to do is go to Apple iTunes and search for Classic Chrome, pull up the page and hit the subscribe button. Everything that we do on this show, all the previous programs and upcoming shows will be downloaded automatically to your device, which is great for on-demand servicing. So that's a great way if you can't make the live shows. Like I said, we do it every Wednesday at 7 p.m., but if you can't make the live shows, you can get us anytime. This show is always dedicated to anything and everything that is related to antique motorcycles. We do a lot of shows that focus on particular technical aspects. We have a once-a-month technical show. We actually had our first episode of that last week. We welcomed Mr. David Lloyd, and we talked about preparing an antique motorcycle to go on a journey, whether it be across the country, around the block, or just out with a couple of your buddies for the weekend. So the importance of preparing your antique motorcycle for a ride, as well as some of the roadside fixes. Now, really had a great hour with David. He is an expert in that field, and he should be after doing the motorcycle cannonball. David rode a 1919 Harley-Davidson J across the country, and he had his share of issues, but he was also very well prepared. So if you missed that show, check it out. You can get it here on blogtalkradio.com/classicchrome, or just, like I said earlier, look on Apple iTunes. Tonight, we're going to be talking with Mr. Ted Daring, and we're going to talk to him in just a few minutes right after our first commercial break. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is the V-Twin Manufacturing Company, as well as Motorcyclepedia, which, if you're not familiar with that, it's located in Newburgh, New York, and it's a wonderful museum full of American and European and Japanese motorcycles from many different years. Wonderful place. Ted's a great guy. He's an ambassador for the antique motorcycle sport, and really looking forward to talking with him and hearing some of his stories, because Ted is essentially an icon when it comes to old bikes. So we're going to talk to him in just a few minutes. I kind of want to get into some of the announcements for the evening. Let's talk about the upcoming segments. You know, we just started with our new broadcasting service here about a month ago, and we've been on the air. We're really excited every week to do the show and hope that you enjoy it. We're getting a lot of positive feedback out there from listeners all over the world, which is great. And we've brought some new segments into the program. We've reformatted the show in our time off, and we have brought in new segments and just a whole bunch of new things. So if you notice at the 15-minute mark, we have From the Archive, which is voiced by Chris Price. That's author of Georgia Motorcycle History and the curator of Archive Moto. And that's your once-a-week history segment. A lot of fun always doing that every week. Hope you guys enjoy that, getting a lot of great feedback from that. We also have the Classic American Iron Trivia segment, which goes on during the half-hour mark. That is sponsored by American Iron Magazine, the world's best-selling American motorcycle magazine. And what that is every week we do a couple-minute-long segment where we talk about some of the history of motorcycling, as well as pose a trivia question. And two lucky listeners every week have the opportunity to win a free one-year subscription to AI Mag. That's about $200 worth of magazines every week given away. Cool stuff, great offer, and it's a great magazine. All you have to do to enter to win is just send in your answer to the trivia question, and you send that to classicchromeradio@gmail.com. And that's the only way you can submit your answers. You can't go to the Classic Chrome Facebook page, or you can't do the chat window here during the live show. You actually have to send it right to the Classic Chrome email address. It's classicchromeradio@gmail.com. And you have from the time the show airs on Wednesday night through the rest of the week, and the winners will be announced on Sunday. So if you noticed from last week, we had a question talking about pan heads, which you'll actually hear again tonight. The reason is apparently there were some technical difficulties in our podcast, and some folks couldn't quite understand the question. So we're going to be replaying that question tonight. We're also going to be posting it on the Classic Chrome Facebook page. But once again, get your answers into classicchromeradio@gmail.com. You have until the end of the week to submit your answers, and the first two people to correctly answer the question will receive a one-year subscription to AI Mag. Great value, great magazine, and we thank the folks at AI Mag for all they do for antique motorcycles. An exciting new segment that we're going to be talking about here in the next few weeks is the Motorcycle Cannonball segment, and we're coming up with a title for that. Then we're hoping, starting maybe next week or the week after, we can introduce that to you folks. And what that'll be is probably during the 45-minute segment of the show, we're going to have a couple-minute-long segment talking about the Motorcycle Cannonball, which is the coast-to-coast endurance race for motorcycles. Next year will be motorcycles built prior to 1917, so 1916 and older motorcycles and cars crossing the country from Atlantic City, New Jersey to San Diego, California. And what we're going to do every week is talk with some of the staff, as well as participants and race teams from the Motorcycle Cannonball and Race of the Century. Should be a great show or a great segment, and we look forward to hearing some of the biographies and really getting to know the people behind the scenes at the Motorcycle Cannonball. So we'll keep you updated on that. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/classicchromeradio. Try to put up at least one antique motorcycle thing a day. Sometimes we get more than that. Sometimes we get fewer than that, but we try to get at least one a day, and we update you on all the happenings with the show, including, like I was just talking about, the Cannonball segment. We'll keep you updated on what the goings on with that are, as well as all the sponsors of the show, where you can go to get deals and offers sponsored by the sponsors of the show. So check us out online. You can also get us here on Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening to us on the podcast, you can get us live on blogtalkradio.com/classicchrome. We should have the Classic Chrome website up here in the next month or so, I'm hoping. And that way you can just go to classicchrome.com and it'll pull up all the good stuff related to the show. It'll be a live player where you can get all the shows, and you can also possibly a blog and photos and videos from all the events that we do across the United States and throughout the year, and as well as viewer-submitted pictures of bikes and videos and great stuff. So a lot of cool stuff coming up. Next week, we're going to be talking with Mr. Chris Noop out of Australia. It'll be our first international show here on the new network, Blog Talk Radio. We're excited for that. And Chris and I are going to be talking about the Australian motorcycle industry from the early 1900s. Should be a really exciting show because you don't hear a lot about Australian motorcycles as far as a countrywide brand. So it'll be really cool to get some history behind Australian motorcycles, hear about some of the very pioneering folks down there, down under, and look forward to that. So next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central, be sure to tune in. And as always, we'll have the Classic Chrome Facebook page popping all throughout the week with promotions for the show and a lot of great motorcycle stuff, so check it out. Some of the upcoming events for the rest of the month, we had over the weekend the Race of Gentlemen up in Wildwood, New Jersey took place. That was rain delayed, and we've actually been posting some videos and photos on the Classic Chrome Facebook page. We're going to keep doing that. Great event. We want to wish all of our friends and show sponsors who are involved in the event a congratulations on their success there. It looked like a really great time. I know Mike Silvio from the Cyclomo Speed Shop, as well as Matt Waxler, Chris Price, John Dills, all those folks, they did a great job out there on the track or on the beach, and we want to send them our very best. So we're going to try and talk with Mike or Matt here probably the next week or so and just get a recap of the event. So stay tuned for that. We'll keep you updated on the goings-on there. Before we go into the events, I had one more announcement, and that was talking about the Georgia motorcycle history. One of our sponsors, Archive Moto, is Chris Price, is curator of Archive Moto, and he's also the author of Georgia Motorcycle History, which is an award-winning, best-selling book talking about just that, the motorcycle history of Georgia, the first installment, 1899 to 1959. Very cool stuff. And Chris just did I believe it might be the third printing, actually, of Georgia Motorcycle History. If you haven't got your copy yet, it's a great coffee table read, full of incredible pictures, lots of great stories. You can get your copy today, and I recommend you get it fast because they're going to sell out quick. Just go to georgiamotorcyclehistory.com. These books are hot items, and I know that they're going to be well sought after for many years. So check it out, georgiamotorcyclehistory.com. The last of events that we're going to talk about, we're going to get close to our 15-minute break here, is coming up this weekend here in Orlando, Florida, is the AMA Hall of Fame induction ceremony at the American International Motorcycle Expo from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. A lot of our friends in the antique motorcycle world are being given the honor of being inducted into the AMA Hall of Fame, which is really an incredible thing. It's open to the public. Tickets are available for $25 a person, and you can find out more information and get your tickets by going to AIMExpoUSA.com. And we'll post all these websites on the Classic Chrome Facebook page, so in case you missed it, you can get it right there. Next weekend, October 23rd through the 24th, in Lukenbach, Texas, is the 13th Annual Harvest Classic Motorcycle Rally for European, Japanese, all kinds of motorcycles out there to be brought out. And they celebrate all kinds. It could be trials bikes, concours, antiques, home built, race bikes, riders, daily riders, so on and so forth. Great event. It's the weekend charity for the event, which is a big part of the Harvest Classic Motorcycle Rally, is the Candlelighters Childhood Cancer Program. And what that is, it's dedicated to making a difference in the lives of families who are living with and battling childhood cancer. Never an easy thing, but the folks in the Harvest Classic Motorcycle Rally want to try and make a difference in those families' lives. And so all throughout the weekend, they're going to be taking donations and auctioning off items. A lot of the proceeds are going to go to that charity. So check it out online. HarvestClassic.org. Be sure to set your schedule and get your bike cleaned up and ready to go for that weekend. And we look forward to seeing some photos and videos of that event. It's always a very hot fall item to go to, and we hope to see you out there. From October 30th through November 1st in Hilton Head, South Carolina, the Hilton Head Concours d'Elegance is going to be taking place. And we had Mr. John Landstrom of Blue Moon Cycle on the show a couple weeks back, and we were talking just about the Hilton Head Concours. And during the Concours event, they're going to have a special motorcycle cannonball display, and a lot of really amazing motorcycles will be there that maybe not related to motorcycle cannonball, but just some really cool bikes will be there. And we hope that you can make it out there for that awesome event. Find out all your information by going to hhiconcours.com. And the last event for the month, and it's kind of a shameless plug, is for the Carson Class Motors first annual Antique Road Run, taking place October 29th through November 1st, and that is in my hometown of Livingston, Texas. And what that's going to be is a three-day riding event for antique and late model motorcycles, about 300 miles of riding over 3 days through scenic Piney Woods of East Texas. Weather should be great, and hopefully we get a lot of entrants. I believe we're talking so far about 150 riders. Will be showing up. It'll include, in addition to the riding, it'll include a private tour of the Carson Class Motors collection, which has never been open to the public, not a public museum. There's going to be another private collection in the area that is opened up from race bikes. A gentleman named Billy Clark is generously opening up his private collection to the participants of the Road Run. Should be a great time. You can get all your information by going to CherokeeAMCA.org. There's no entry fee for the event. There's going to be two hosted social events with live food, live music and food there available for purchase. Hope to see you out there. So with that, we're coming up on our 15-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Mr. Ted Daring. And we're going to talk about V-Twin manufacturing as well as Motorcyclepedia. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back.
Chrome is powered by Blog Talk Radio and proudly brought to you by American Iron Magazine, the world's best-selling American motorcycle magazine. The Wheels Through Time Transportation Museum of Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Cycle Most Speed Shop of Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee. Archive Moto of Atlanta, Georgia. The Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum of Colorado Springs. Sagebrush Cycle in Flower Mound, Texas. Carson Classic Motors in Livingston, Texas. Retro Cycle of Boonton, New Jersey. And the Motorcycle Cannonball. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more old motorcycle fun after this break.
Before the infamous Vortrack motodromes and massive super speedways, before the fervent manufacturer arms races and the mighty advertising economy, and before sponsorship and stardom, daring young men obsessed with speed and victory barreled around local horse tracks in tremendous clouds of oily dust. By 1908, motorcycles were less than a decade old, really no more than stout bicycles with gasoline engines strapped on, but already they had become the main attraction at fairgrounds across the country. On October 10, 1908, the Indiana Motorcycle Club held their first event on the one-mile dirt horse track at the State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis. A large number of enthusiastic early motorcycalists arrived to test their mettle, but it was a young Chicago native named Freddie Hook that stood out that day. Another of America's earliest motorcycle racing elite, Hook won every race he entered that day and set a new one-mile record in a shade over 56 seconds. Freddie dominated a large field of competitors on board a very special loop-frame prototype Indian Twin, one of only three newly developed that year by Oscar Hedstrom, the innovative engineer at the Hindi Manufacturing Company. The new design would mark the beginning of a transition, the dawn of the modern motorcycle. Local organizations like the Indiana Motorcycle Club would continue to grow, all while organizing and promoting motorcycle races. In a few short months, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, America's legendary racing mecca, would be constructed just a few blocks from the fairgrounds. Within a year, Indian signed its first factory racing star, Jake DeRozier, soon followed by Hyuk, and America's first Vortrack motodrome was opened in Los Angeles. A new era had begun to take shape, motorcycle racing's crowded hour, a time in which competition, innovation, and fearlessness gave rise to a new industry, a new breed of American hero, and established one of America's richest cultural strands.
From the Archive is your weekly segment, sponsored by Archive Moto and voiced by Chris Price, author of Georgia Motorcycle History. For more stories from the pioneer days of motorcycling, check out archivemoto.com and follow along on Facebook and Instagram. Hey everybody, it's Buck Carson from Classic Chrome Radio. Today I want to tell you about the fine folks at the CycleMose Speed Shop, where since 1999, owner Mike Silvio and a gang have been offering a wide variety of great services at great prices to old motorcycle owners. Whether you're looking for a full restoration, engine and transmission service, or complete restoration, whether leave the outside of your machine crusty and rusty and the inside brand new, check them out. Mike and the gang can handle it no problem, easily and professionally. I give them my highest recommendation. Some of the best performing machines that I've ever ridden have come through the doors of the CycleMose Speed Shop. He's also got a great collection of parts, always for sale, and motorcycles for sale. You've seen him on American Pickers, now's your chance to see it in real life. 319 East Main Street, Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee. 615-670-8942 is the number, and tell them that Buck Carson from Classic Chrome sent you. You can also find them online at CycleMose.com or on Facebook or Instagram under CycleMose. Remember, CycleMose, where in rust, we trust.
Thank you.
And we're back here on Classic Chrome. Hope you guys enjoyed the From the Archive segment. That's always one of my favorite parts of the show because it's a connection back to our motorcycling history. So with that, we're going to go ahead and kick off our show tonight. If you've read the description of tonight's show, we're going to be talking with Mr. Ted Daring in just a minute. I'm going to bring him in about 30 seconds or so. And we are talking about Ted's industry-leading company, V-Twin Manufacturing, as well as the Motorcyclopedia Museum, which Ted is the president and curator of. So with that, please welcome Mr. Ted Daring. And Ted, how are you doing tonight? Thank you for joining me.
Good. Thank you, Buck, for, inviting us, on your show. And I realize you're pretty much dedicated to the antique side of the hobby. And I think our business, as far as when you mentioned the V-Twin or the Ted Cycle, that's certainly my favorite piece of the industry as far as, the antique products and the ones, related for restoration and, and then the running of the motors. Now that more people are interested in actually riding, like with the Cannonball, and they're actually looking to put some miles on.
You know, it's really, I think, the antique motorcycle segment of the world, the motorcycling industry. It attracts a lot of people, and you see it on the popular television shows, whether it be American Pickers or What's in the Barn, or a lot of these very popular shows, and it attracts them because it's a connection back to, I think for a lot of people, it's a connection back to their families. They can remember their grandparents or their parents telling them about, back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, and talking about these amazing motorcycles that they were riding back then. And for a lot of motorcyclists today, I feel that it's an interesting learning experience for them because, so many motorcyclists today are used to walking up, turning the key on and pushing the button and riding away. And with an old motorcycle, we all know that that's not exactly how it happens, but it's all good stuff.
And I think, Buck, and you're certainly correct, where a lot of people, it came from an uncle or a father or a family member, where as a young child, you're watching, you're listening to the motorcycle run, and you're only waiting, hey, maybe when I'm a teenager, I'll get a motorcycle. Of course, the other thing years ago, things were more mechanical, and maybe you could maybe relate to them easier or understand them better, and maybe that's how you get a more personal attachment than just riding the motorcycle, which I think today some of the guys maybe they had rode some motorcycles in the 60s and they get a new one, but they kind of get bored because there's nothing to do to it. You just ride. So, the actual tinkering or mechanical aspect of it is probably just as important as the ride.
That's very true. And, it's an interesting point that you bring up that there's not a lot for them to do with modern bikes. And I was actually having a conversation with somebody today about that, in fact, whether it be a modern motorcycle or a modern car. There's really nothing mechanical that the average Joe can do anymore because of the way that, machines are designed today, whether it be a brand new car off the lot or a brand new Harley Davidson or an Indian, for the most part, I mean, there's obviously some exceptions, but for the most part, they're built so that they have to go back to the dealership, which is, when it comes to antique motorcycles, you can't take it back for warranty work now. But Ted, if you would, let's go ahead and talk about some of your background and how you got involved with motorcycling.
I think if I start, obviously, again, my dad, he started, working or riding motorcycles in the early 40s. And then myself as a teenager in the 50s or 60s, we had motorcycles around the farm, almost exclusively Indians, because he had worked in an Indian dealership in the late 40s. Myself, I wasn't that big on the Indians because all my friends or whatever, they started, had Triumphs or Harleys, so I kind of gravitated towards the Harleys. But basically, probably by the late 60s, actually starting to sell motorcycle products or primarily used parts, in that respect. So my dad actually joined me in the business in 1973. He had an electrical contracting business. I used to work for him, and the neighbors would always joke, like, oh, the kid used to work for the dad. Now the dad works for him. So that's kind of where we actually started to be officially, you know, a motorcycle business, you know, where it was a, you know, more serious than a hobby. And that's the thing, too. You lose some of the hobby part when you do it as a business. But that's kind of where the origins were. Actually starting to, we started to build, you know, the aftermarket products probably by 1976 or 77, and that's when we formulated the V-Twin brand. I think one of the first products we built was a set of 80-inch flatheads in cast aluminum. And we kind of started there, and then every month or so we'd bring out a new product kind of as needed. And if we think back then, too, the aftermarket wasn't very important at that time because there was a lot of new old stock parts and the bikes weren't worth a lot of money. You could part one out, and certainly there was always a good parts supply that way. And then as the years went on, the parts kind of dwindled down, and that's probably where the aftermarket, you know, was more responsive to, you know, what people needed.
That's very true. Now, Ted, let me ask you this, just for some of our listeners who may not maybe understand the process. In branching out into the aftermarket side of things with the motorcycle industry, how does that process work when it comes to designing parts and maybe walking your audience through some of the processes there to create a part from having an idea to having a finished product?
Well, I think basically a lot of the parts, well, not a lot of the parts, but clutch cables, some of the basic items that would, you know, that are actually that would be part of regular maintenance, they were always available, say, so clutches, cables, you know, tires, or maybe even rims. I guess as time went on, you know, we had to get more into the hard parts, which, you know, valves and pistons, you know, they were kind of always available from Beck or some of the companies in the 40s and 50s. I think there was Hap Jones, Beck, Anderson Cycle Supply. There was a pretty good aftermarket group, but again, they didn't go into some really, you know, the tough parts, say like maybe a generator or a brake drum and something that would take more work and more tooling. So as time went on, again, too, the business had to be big enough and enough actual volume overall to invest money in new and complicated products. So for ourselves, we've probably been, with V-Twin, probably about 40 years to get to the point where we had almost virtually every part. I think the first totally aftermarket bike we built in 1998, we built a Panhead, a 1948 Panhead. So basically that would include every transmission part, all the engine components, heads, and, you know, every single part. So I think a lot of restoration guys, we kind of like, it's like the Odd Couple. We want everything to be reproduction, and they want everything to be original. So we learn a lot through the assembly of part. That's probably the biggest learning curve is when you try to put, you know, a few thousand parts together. Kind of shows a lot of the mistakes and things that you have to tweak or, you know, improve upon. So that's probably, you know, a big help that way, you know, learning more about the products and how they work or how they fit.
Yeah, you know, Ted, I think I share your sentiment there. I always tell people when it comes to antique motorcycles that you never really graduate from the school of learning about them. And I've talked to folks that are, you know, in their mid-70s, and they've been around a lot of the machines since they were brand new. And, you know, things they've told me is that, you know, when it comes to working on them or putting parts on them or making parts, you never stop learning. So that's a very important aspect of what you're doing there with the antique parts. So, Ted, we're up against our 30-minute break. And when we come back, let's keep talking about V-Twin and getting some more aspects of growing a business and quality control and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So stay with us. We'll be right back, everybody.
Okay, Buck.
We'll be right back.
Classic Chrome is powered by Blog Talk Radio and proudly brought to you by American Iron Magazine, the world's best-selling American motorcycle magazine. The Wheels Through Time Transportation Museum of Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Cycle Most Speed Shop of Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee. Archive Moto of Atlanta, Georgia. The Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum of Colorado Springs. Sagebrush Cycle in Flower Mound, Texas. Carson Classic Motors in Livingston, Texas. Retro Cycle of Boonton, New Jersey. And the Motorcycle Cannonball. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more old motorcycle fun after this break.
And now it's time for the Classic American Iron Trivia segment, brought to you by American Iron Magazine, where each week two lucky listeners will have the opportunity to win a one-year subscription to AI Mag by correctly answering the following question. You can submit your answers to classicchromeradio@gmail.com, and you have all week to submit them. Winners will be announced on Sundays. 1948 marked a very big year in the Harley-Davidson timeline. It marked the very first year of the Panhead model, which was produced from 1948 through 1965, and marked the last year of the stock Springer front end, although customers could still request a Springer on following year models. This week's American Iron Trivia segment question: in what year did the Panhead receive a hydraulic front end? What year did it receive a sprung rear end? In what year was the electric start option available? When it comes to finding parts for your antique motorcycle, would you go to a big box store? What about trusting your parts picking to order takers that only care about securing your money? Wouldn't you rather have someone on your side who understands? Consider RetroCycle, a small full-service shop in Boonton, New Jersey with a large web-based presence to meet your needs. And I recommend RetroCycle because I know firsthand that the phone will get answered by a live person with experience and understanding of old motorcycles. With an extensive inventory of new old stock and aftermarket parts for your vintage bike, these guys go the extra mile so that you can too. Also consider some of the other services offered by RetroCycle, such as engine and transmission rebuilding, lacing wheels, full restorations, electrical service, and plating such as nickel, chrome, and parkerizing. They've been doing this for many years and these guys know what they're doing. Motorcycle enthusiasts like you all over the world trust RetroCycle to get it right. Shouldn't you? Check them out on Facebook, RetroCycle, or go to RetroCycle.com. Remember, RetroCycle, where everything old is new again.
And we're back here after our 30-minute break. This is Classic Chrome Radio. If you were just now tuning in and you just caught the Classic American Iron Trivia segment, you might be wondering why the trivia question this week is the same as last week. Well, we had some technical difficulties, I guess, for the podcast. We were getting a couple emails from some of our listeners that they couldn't quite understand what the question was. They couldn't hear it clearly, so we went ahead and re-ran it for this week. So the question from last week and this week is the same. You have until the end of this week to get your answers in. Just send them to classicchromeradio@gmail.com, and winners will be announced on Sunday. Great contest, and it's we're very proud to be sponsored by American Iron Magazine and very grateful for the magazines they give our listeners every week. Two listeners every week can have a chance to win a one-year subscription. So stay tuned every week, 30-minute segment. Hope you guys enjoy it. We're going to bring Mr. Ted Daring back in just a second. Ted is joining us tonight. We are talking about V-Twin Manufacturing, which is, I would have to say, the world's largest aftermarket and restoration parts supplier out there for antique and late model motorcycles. And boy, what an industry giant it is. And it's such an honor to be talking to Ted tonight. And in just a few minutes after we talk about V-Twin, we're going to also touch on the Motorcyclopedia Museum there in Newburgh, New York. So with that, please welcome Ted back to the program. Ted, you know, before we left for the commercial break, we were talking about how the business started, and it started in, you know, the the late 1970s when you went to the aftermarket side of things. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is the growth of the business. When you started, did you ever imagine that it would grow into something this massive? Because, you know, V-Twin is it's known all over the world. It's in the motorcycle industry. It's a household name.
Well, I would say, Buck, that basically when we started, you know, say we make a part, say even from the 1970s, we try to stay with it where we have that part basically, you know, forever. Not that we're going to have them forever, but where the person doesn't want you to be out of stock, we try to ship, you know, have the part in stock and then ship the same day. And since the mid-70s, we've shipped to wholesale accounts, dealers, and basically we've always held, we had, you know, their shops that either sell parts and or work on motorcycles. And that's something that has changed in the last few years where there's more internet-based companies, but they're not service shops, and they certainly, a lot of times, they don't understand the products because they're not using them. They're just selling parts. So that's a little bit of a change. But I see in your trivia segment, you're mentioning the 48 Panhead, and if I go back to that and explain, that was our first complete motorcycle. There was just a lot of pieces that I think we had to, between the transmission, the spring fork assembly, the shock, you know, getting the gas tanks to fit the dash correctly. Those Harley engineers did some job with tolerances and fits. Some of them, like the engine or the top motor mount, there's only maybe a 16th or an eighth of an inch between some of the major components. Everything has to fit together, and for the restoration side, it has to look original at the same time. It can't just be a replacement part. You know, it has to look the piece always. I think, you know, only my hairdresser knows for sure. Well, only the restorer knows for sure if it's an original part. So, you know, the people demand, you know, as the years went on, especially in the last 5 years with the AMC point system, you know, they want correctness. They've got it down to the length of the bolt and the thread, the numbers on the head, as most of the listeners would know by now. It's pretty strict as far as what people expect.
You know, that's very true, and it is a very stringent policy. I always like to think that there's many different types of people in the antique motorcycle industry. There's those folks that, you know, they buy an old bike because they just want to ride it till the wheels fall off and then rebuild it and do it again. And then you've got folks that, you know, they want to do a 100-point restoration where it's exactly like it came out of the factory, and because that obviously adds value if they're looking for an investment value. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with either side of it. And this kind of leads me to where I wanted to take our conversation. We talked about this before the show. You know, with V-Twin, there's a lot of, I guess I would say there's both sides in the motorcycle industry. There's those that really throw a lot of great support at V-Twin, and there's those that they have issues with quality control. Now, I'll tell you, Ted, and I told you this before the show, I have bought from V-Twin for many years. My personal feeling is that without what your company does, there would be so many motorcycles in this country and across the world that would not be able to be on the road because of the parts that are available through V-Twin. So with what V-Twin does, it keeps these motorcycles on the road. But then you've got folks out there that, you know, they're concerned about the quality. What can you do to address some of those concerns?
And I think certainly over decades, we've remade the parts, or, you know, when we do a second production run, you know, we learn more, we can get, you know, maybe the process is, you know, a little more correct, you know, between the blueprints and the drawings. Some of the parts we've made 2, 3, 4 times, and we can get to tune them in because we know exactly what to do. I guess the first thing, we have to be at the right factory that can actually do the job and does that part. A lot of guys, oh, send me a sample, I can make that for you. Well, they probably don't have the wherewithal, or they don't have the experience with that process. almost every piece is made by, you know, a different company, and an assembly could be made by five companies. I think like a kicker kit for a Sportster or for a big twin would probably be about five factories total, you know, between the casting, forging, the gear cutting, maybe a spring winder, you know, to do the spring. So each person is responsible for one component. So, and then to get all these components to be synchronized when you get them done, that sometimes is a hard part. You're dealing with the five makers. You know, it's not like one big factory you walk in and the part is ready. So basically, I know the frames, we've worked on the frames since the mid-90s, doing the forgings and the stampings to get them. We've, you know, made different fixtures, and then because between all the models, the knucklehead and panhead, you know, there is a lot of it's the same, but there is enough differences where you know tweaking the fixtures and the the actual tooling. So basically, in our frame, once we had the frame, we could actually build a reproduction motorcycle. And a lot of guys, that's okay if they just want to ride the bike. They don't care the amount of reproduction parts, you know, that would be involved. They're just out to have fun. Whereas the restoring guy, as you're mentioning, for value or for investment, they want as detailed, and they have to have original. So the aftermarket really can never come up to that level because, you know, it's not original. So it kind of, the conversation kind of, it stops. But certainly, throughout the years, we've made mistakes. We've made parts over. We've had a lot of runs. You know, everybody sees what we sell that they see every day. We have, you know, we have a warehouse full of stuff that we don't sell also. So, I mean, it's a long process, and we'll keep going. We're down to probably the last. The most complicated pieces for us is the linker carburetor, which we're just about ready with the 3-bolt linker carburetor, the different components and then assembling. We've assembled a few running models of it, and we actually have the fellow from the antique club, either Bruce Lindsay or Dan Hankey, do some of the testing, I think, on the generators. Rob at RetroCycle, you know, he'd be helping us test some of the parts out, you know, making the armature. We're working, you know, on the commutator, having the right size wire, plus all the other dimensions on the splines and the ground pieces where the bearing goes. So even, you know, the generator, even though they were developed in the 1930s, boy, they're still hard to do today. So.
Well, you know, and it's like I said earlier, it's really a testament to the hard work that you folks have done there all over, you know, throughout the years, keeping vintage motorcycles alive on the road. And without the hard work that you're putting in and without the dedication of your team, you know, it would be a very different industry. So I applaud you for that. Ted, we're up against our 45-minute break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the Motorcyclopedia Museum. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Classic Chrome is powered by Blog Talk Radio and proudly brought to you by American Iron Magazine, the world's best-selling American motorcycle magazine, the Wheels Through Time Transportation Museum of Maggie Valley, North Carolina, Cycle Most Speed Shop of Red Boiling Springs, Tennessee, Archive Moto of Atlanta, Georgia, the Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum of Colorado Springs, Sagebrush Cycle in Flower Mound, Texas, Carson Classic Motors in Livingston, Texas, RetroCycle of Boonton, New Jersey, and the Motorcycle Cannonball. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more old motorcycle fun after this break. The Wheels Through Time Museum in Maggie Valley, North Carolina is a must-see museum for all auto and motorcycle enthusiasts, and a supremely cool destination location. Nestled right in the middle of the scenic Smoky Mountains and just a short ride from the Blue Ridge Parkway, Wheels Through Time offers its visitors an incredible look into the world's premier collection of all-American two- and four-wheeled mechanical history in a 40,000-square-foot space of unique displays and memorabilia. As seen on American Pickers and What's in the Barn, the museum offers a chance for all to see, hear, and touch amazing pieces of machinery from yesteryear in an unparalleled visitor experience. Wheels Through Time is open from Thursday to Monday from 9 to 5 and closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Open season for Wheels Through Time is from April through November, and admission prices start at just $6 for children. Find out more by visiting wheelsthroughtime.com, and be sure to follow us on Facebook. Just search Wheels Through Time. Looking for a quality motorcycle magazine chock full of interesting tech articles, ride reviews, and event coverage? Look no further than American Iron Magazine, the world's best-selling American motorcycle magazine. Since 1989, American Iron Magazine puts out 13 big issues a year, jam-packed with motorcycle information, events, and of course, plenty of focus on old iron. Every issue of American Iron features classic American motorcycles, related tech projects, and various history connections. But unlike so many other magazines, the American Iron Magazine crew doesn't just report on classic motorcycles and the scene, they experience it. Besides having completed every motorcycle cannonball event, publisher Buzz Cantor and his hard-working staff constantly promote classic motorcycle events and run the Motorcycle Kickstart Classic ride every year. American Iron Magazine is available on newsstands, or save big time and subscribe. Printed issues are $26.95 a year, or you can opt for a digital delivery anywhere in the world for just $19.95 a year. Check out AIMAG.com. That's AIMAG.com for more details. Or give the fine folks at our office a call at 877-693-3572.
Located in the shadow of Pikes Peak, the Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum and Hall of Fame in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado, invites you to come, visit, and enjoy our humble collection of antique and classic motorcycles. Established in 1992, admission is always free, and visitors will enjoy seeing a variety of American, European, and Asian iron spanning from 1913 to 1973. The Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum is open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and is located on the mezzanine level of Pikes Peak Harley-Davidson. Check us out online at themotorcyclemuseum.com. That's themotorcyclemuseum.com. The Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum, proud sponsor of the Classic Chrome Radio Show with Buck Carson.
Back here on Classic Chrome after a great commercial break. Hopefully coming up here in the next few weeks, folks, during the 45-minute segment, we're going to have the Motorcycle Cannonball Meet the Staff and Meet the Rider segment. Should be pretty cool. We will keep you updated on that as we get more in-depth and we do our first round of interviews with Cannonball staff and riders. Should be a great thing, and hope you guys enjoy it. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, or things you like or things you don't like, be sure to let us know. Send us an email at classicchromeradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We always like talking to the listeners. We're getting a lot of great feedback from all over the world. Seems like there's people from all corners of the world that enjoy the show. And whenever or wherever they might catch you, we appreciate you, and we appreciate your support. And we appreciate the support of our sponsors, as always. Classic Chrome is proudly sponsored by all the following companies: American Iron Magazine, Cyclomotive Speed Shop, Wheels Through Time, Retrocycle, Carson Classic Motors, Archive Moto, the Rocky Mountain Motorcycle Museum, Motorcycle Cannonball, and Sagebrush Cycles. Just a quick plug there for our sponsors. We really appreciate their support and all they do for the antique motorcycle industry. So with me tonight, we're going to bring him in just a second, is Mr. Ted Derrick. He's the owner of V-Twin Manufacturing, and he is also the president of the Motorcyclopedia Museum. We're going to talk with him about that now. We just had a great conversation talking about the introduction of V-Twin, the aftermarket industry, and where the business has started from and where it's gone to. So please help me in welcoming back to the show Mr. Ted Derrick. And Ted, let's talk a little bit about Motorcyclopedia and where that started and how that started.
So basically, Buck, the Motorcyclopedia, you know, a lot of the basic or one of the largest portions of it would be my dad collected Indians probably since the mid-40s, I think 1944, 45. So it took him, he's got about 65 years, he's 88 now, so to collect, he wanted to have an Indian timeline of the Springfield Indians. So he has 1901 that he did through 53, and then, of course, there's the various models and different ones in the few years, you know, the Chief, four-cylinder Scout, and whatever. So that was kind of his goal over the years. So in 2010, we started talking about the museum. Myself, I had some choppers and some early, you know, preteen bikes that I had collected on my own. So talking about a museum, he wasn't that big on it at first because most collectors are private, as a lot of your listeners or yourself would realize. And so after a few months, he said, oh, no, okay, we'll go ahead and do it. So that was mid-2010, you know, actually starting on the building, which we had already owned the building, which was one of our offices, just a matter of cleaning that out and getting started on the construction. In New York State, to have a museum, you have to have a charter from the Board of Regents and actually the state university system. So the first thing they had to do was approve it culturally. Does the state even need a motorcycle museum? I mean, they realize motorcycling is not a big percentage of the population. But after a few months, our local senator helped us. And finally, in September of 2010, you know, we had the provisional charter. That helped us get ready, so we were ready for April of 2011. So that's when we officially opened with, it's about 85,000 square feet total. So we have the Indian timeline, which is one separate gallery. There's a chopper area. So each area is kind of represented, police, military, you know, the very ancient ones, which were basically French and German from the late 1800s. So most recently, we dedicated the one gallery to Ed Youngblood of, you know, he was the AMA president for many years, and he's active with the Antique Motorcycle Foundation. So, you know, Ed was a big help in getting that gallery ready when we opened. So that's a part of it also. So basically, you know, we have students come in. Of course, the motorcyclists are kind of a natural, but we wanted to cover it, like, from the cultural side, where if a guy comes in with his wife and his wife or his grandmother is not a motorcycle enthusiast, can we connect with things of that period, whether it's a movie or a record or a price of gasoline, something that everyone that comes in would feel that, hey, there was something there for me. So.
Well, you know, you've also got some really interesting exhibits that – even if you're not a motorcycle enthusiast, it definitely catches your attention. You know, you've got the Wall of Death there. Would you tell our audience a little bit about the Wall of Death exhibit you have?
Well, yeah, we didn't. That started, that was probably 2010 also. Maybe that helped actually get us going. We always wanted to have the Wall of Death inside the building. We have one, well, actually we have three of them. My dad purchased one from Thunder Clunder in Minneapolis. That was in the around 2000-2001. It was a little bit tall to go inside the building, and then we found the one in Germany that would actually, you know, fit with its the tent top and everything, so it fit inside the building. I think it's about a 25-foot ceiling, so he would come from Germany once a year and ride at the museum. So basically, that was the reason, you know, to have it inside so we could have actually shows in the winter.
Sure, it makes total sense, and it's a very interesting part of the museum because, you know, I can't think of too many places that I've been to where you can walk in and see a full wall of death taking place inside of a building. It's a very cool aspect to Motorcyclopedia. And, you know, in addition to the great exhibits, you've hosted some pretty incredible events. You know, I remember in 2012, you graciously hosted us for the Motorcycle Cannonball. We took off there from the museum in Newburgh.
Yes.
And you've done a lot of other really great events. Do you have a lot of schools that show up and field trips there?
I think we have the trade schools. We have, young students, from the local grade schools. We've had the West Point Military Academy. We had they were writing some essays on motorcycle culture, and one of the professors brought those guys up to write some articles. So basically, New York State is big on the educational component. One of their questions each year is how many students, how many children came to visit the museum that year. So they really push the education part of that.
And what better place to get an education than Motorcyclopedia? What a great name for it, too. Now, where do you see the museum going here maybe the next 10 years? Do you see it expanding out? Do you see it staying in the same location?
I think this is where we, you know, my dad or myself grew up. We're from New Windsor, Newburgh, this area. You know, this is where my dad grew up, you know, working in a motorcycle shop. We know kind of all the people, the volunteers, and the one fellow that volunteers is a guy that rode to Florida with my dad in the late 1940s. So he still helps. He bought his Indian in Newburgh on Broadway. And so a lot of it's local guys that come in, tell their story. And that's another thing I would say. The motorcycles are relatively inanimate, but when people's stories that connect to a motorcycle about their grandfather, or a guy comes in and said, oh, that's how I met my wife. I crashed on my motorcycle and I met this woman, a nurse, and then we got married. They were married for, you know, they're 80-some years old. So, you know, people stay with motorcycles. It's a hobby, too, where if you start as a teenager or whatever, you're still going way into your 80s. You don't quit, like in boating. There's a lot of things, hobbies, where the people, they don't stay with it. They kind of get bored or something happens. The motorcycle guys, they're going to go. They go right to the end. So,
and you know, it's something I say often on the show is that I find with antique motorcycle and actually car enthusiasts too that there's a common theme, and that theme is that the things that we love, whether it be motorcycles or cars, it's like a sickness. And it's one that there is no cure for. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't think many people would like a cure for that. It's a very enjoyable sickness. So with that, Ted, I'm going to let you have the closing comments. Folks, I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. We'll see you next week when we have Mr. Chris Knoop on. But, Ted, the floor is yours.
All right. So we talked a little bit about the museum, the events. We're on the East Coast, there's a pretty good population on the East Coast as far as the number of people. You know, of course, we're about 50-some miles from New York City. So basically, we do have people in that respect. We're Route 84 and the New York State Thruway 87 cross. So pretty accessible, and people can drive in. It's probably a half a day's drive for a pretty good part of the East Coast. So we do get that. But as the years go on, a lot of this, the whole idea was estate planning, like, you know, my dad or myself, to have, you know, basically 100 years of collecting in motorcycles. You know, what are we going to do with them? What's going to happen? So I figured this way, the museum and the New York State Museum Charter, we'd have a little more longevity, and hopefully, you know, it would go on certainly beyond us. But thank you, guys. Thanks, Buck.